Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST, Baltimore Positive. We're Jennings. We're only into the second segment. We ran really long on the first segment. We're going to run really long on this segment, then really long again. And I'm going to want the Jennings burger even more by the time we get to it.
I'm getting worked up for the Jennings burger here in Catonsville,
well,
to be honest.
Don, reset everything here because we got swallowed up. I swore that we were going to go narrative style right from the beginning. You always say it's never a straight line, and what kind of a tree would you be? That's a third segment. But we got kind of caught up in all of this.
Well, but I think we did, and Sarah's going to bring us back to it. I think we did start to scratch the surface of Thread when Sarah talks about her childhood and meeting Ryan and the fact that folks stepped in to make a difference mm-hmm. for him. I was struck by David Brooks's affection for Thread. And for folks who don't know, David Brooks, famous New York Times columnist. And one of the things, there are a couple things that he wrote, Sarah, maybe you can talk about it as we leapfrog to the second segment. He talked about that it was very difficult to distinguish between those who are helping, or those who are giving, I think is the way he said it, and those who are receiving. He said one of the things for him that just leaped out at Thread was hard to tell who was giving and who was receiving. And that seems to me to be at the core of Thread.
Exactly. So I think, you know, thinking about our DNA and kind of my upbringing and Ryan's, you know, what we actually do is we enroll high school freshmen who, similar to the situation Ryan was in, academically rank in the bottom 25% of their class.
So these are 13, 14, 15 years of age, primarily.
Or if they've come in having failed three grades, 16. 17.
Okay.
So a mixture.
They can be, but they're 14 to 17 then,
correct.
Generally. Okay, perfect. Okay.
And these are brilliant, beautiful, bold young people who are completely capable of extraordinary academic achievements, but they are often faced with immense distraction outside of the school day. And so, you know, just like Ryan, you know, once they're enrolled in Thread, when we think about a relationship, it's not a program. So once they're in Thread, it is for 10 years. So all of high school, 6 years after high school, and you can't get out.
What makes you a candidate? I mean, what would exclude you or include you from being a candidate as a incarceration? I mean,
you mean how does she identify the students?
Yeah, what would make you eligible or not eligible? How do you find or... Because you can't have everyone, right? Am I right in saying that? You want to, but you can't. Not right now. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I see you looking at me with the evil eye saying, no, we will get everybody. But not right now.
Right. We enroll young people currently from Dunbar High School, Douglas, Digital, and ACE, which is the Academy for College and Career Exploration. To be eligible, they simply just have to academically rank in the bottom 25% of their class during the first quarter of their freshman year. So our assumption is that, similar to Ryan, that is just indicative of there must be other things going on. So the things that you were mentioning would never disqualify a young person from enrollment in Thread. And then once they're in, though, they cannot get out. So what often happens is a young person has to agree. It's not mandated. The school doesn't say you have to do this. But we engage young people in the same way we would engage recruiting a volunteer or a collaborator or a board member, which is to really explain to them what it means to be in Thread. What does that mean? It means to be in relationship with people in a deep and meaningful and permanent way where you're seen, you see other people, you're challenged, you grow. Thread is a very like uncomfortable place to be, but a safe place to be. And so it's to say to them, we want you, we need you, we want you to be in Thread. And so we're successful at getting young people to opt in. What happens then is once they're in Thread, similar to the teachers with my husband, there's up to four adults who create basically an extended family. This is in no way meant to replace their family. These are four individuals who integrate into the social structure that that young person has. That might be their parents, their neighbors, their siblings, their grandparents. Whoever is their circle, the intention is for those four people to get to know that young person's circle and vice versa. So the way we know things are really starting to work is, can a young person tell you my husband's name and my child's name? Because if you had a real relationship, those are things that you would know about one another, right? And if we're, again, trying to deconstruct this idea of haves and have-nots, if we're both coming into this with something to gain and something to give, then you should see that mutuality show up in things like, well, I went to your cousin's baby shower and you came to my cousin's baby shower.
Sure.
And so...
So this isn't after school mentoring or what I got for Algebra 2, right? Like,
no.
This is a whole different game.
No, this is like knitting together an entirely new social fabric in the city. And the mechanism to do so is to rally people around, you know, young high school students, but this is intended. The intention is to build these relationships.
Sarah, back up, because I really liked Nestor's attempt to get into the structure. So I want to dig down further to that, because I want to understand it, and I'm guessing our listeners do. Let's pick a young man. It's the first quarter. He's at Dunbar. Deshaun. Let's call him Deshaun.
Okay.
So you get a... I don't even want to assume. So the principal of Dunbar gives someone in your organization a list in the near future of students who are in the bottom 25%.
Exactly.
I'm assuming they were in the bottom 25% in 7th and 8th grade, kind of, sort of, too. It's not.
But
like,
we're looking in the 9th grade,
maybe,
right?
Maybe not. We're looking at
this isn't
ninth
the first
grade.
Time they've had challenges.
So,
right?
So Deshaun is on the list. He's one of X number of students.
Yes.
Okay. Now, describe for us how you initiate contact with Deshaun. I'm really interested in how it works.
How it looks. So to first, sometimes if we get lucky, we initiate the contact just by going to the school, finding them in one of their classes, and then we do orientations in the same way we would orient any new human being into THREAD. But oftentimes, like take our first cohort of students at Douglas, over half of the students had GPAs of 0 that were eligible, meaning they weren't even coming to school.
Right.
So that year, it took, actually, I think it was the year after that, over 500 home visits just to locate the young people to even tell them about THREAD.
You had to find them. They weren't in social studies for you to go down and bring them to a meeting.
But put yourself in their shoes. Like, okay, so you're not going to school, and then like some random person who you've never met before just keeps showing up at your house to talk to you about THREAD. You're kind of like, huh, that's interesting. Like, you know, if nothing else, it drives a little bit of curiosity.
Does Deshaun's mom... I don't want to assume any family structure. Do the folks caring about Deshaun in whatever structure he's living in, do they know who you are, meaning you, the THREAD folks, and why you're coming before you come?
Well, we often send letters in advance, but so some do, some don't.
But it's never an appointment. It's a knock on the door. Or do they make an appointment?
I mean, if we can reach the if we have a phone number and can reach the family, then
why
it could be an appointment.
School this morning? Why would they make an appointment with you? Right? Literally, we're
so so. I'm going back to Brooks's comments and observations about giving and receiving. I'm thinking too of your volunteers and their uniqueness and the training and their commitment, because I'm imagining that some of these neighborhoods that folks are driving into, getting out of the car, going up to knock on a door, don't necessarily look like the white picket fence in the suburbs where many of your folks probably grew up. Am I right or wrong in that?
Absolutely.
So talk to me about prepping your volunteers
every
to go
part
into
of
these
this sounds like an immense challenge. You know,
it sounds like a challenge. That's
every
a great
one of
way
these
to
things, for anybody listening, say, well, that would put me out, and I can't imagine doing that.
It sounds like a challenge.
Yeah.
So how do you...
But you can.
You can.
And it's fun and awesome and beautiful and scary and all of those things at the same time. So look, it goes something like this, right? We go and enroll. We talk to the young person. We talk to their parent. We enroll them. We have to select randomly because we can't enroll everyone who is eligible. What very often happens right after that, though, is once they're enrolled, if you have someone who's not going to school, what ends up happening is now the volunteers start showing up every morning at 7 a.m. to wake you up, make sure you're ready, and take you to school. So you signed up for something.
That's the thread.
And so, like, it's a lot easier now that we're 15 years old, because oftentimes we have such a reputation within a neighborhood that everyone knows us. And so it's a situation where we have a lot of credibility and people will help us. But
do people hurt you? Do people try to intentionally...
Like, you mean physically?
No, I mean, we're speaking this as like everyone would be interested in this, and that they really have a parent, and that their parent really cares that they go to school, and that those are the challenges. You're making it sound too easy. I think.
Oh no,
I know
not
it's
easy.
Not. But.
So let me walk you through. Sure. It's like 7 a.m, right? So it's not easy. We get to. Oh, and by the way, like one of the things that very much has helped in the last couple years with enrolling young people is that the individuals on our staff who are doing and leading that process are student alumni. So you've got someone who might have grown up 5 doors down coming and saying, hey, I know you. I knew you before you were born. I know your family. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Thread. And like, I'm part of Thread. I've been part of Thread for 15 years. This is what it is. And like, I strongly advise that you join. Right. So that also is a piece of this.
So only
now.
When you get people in the neighborhood, you can't have outsiders coming from the, I mean, you can, but it's more effective when it's insiders though.
Just different. I wouldn't
Just
say
different.
More effective.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's something, So you start in the enrollment case where we have what you're calling insiders that are supporting with that process. But then very quickly what happens is the young person gets a Thread family. So that Thread family is these 4 adults. And those 4 adults are generally not alumni, right? So they're college students, they're retirees, they're business folk. So what happens is then you have someone start showing up at 7 a.m. and they're there to give a young person a ride to school. And you might have an adult who thinks like, here's the, you know, I'm going to go and help. I want to be useful. I'm going to join Thread. I'm going to take a kid to school. They show up, they knock on the door. No one answers. Keep knocking for 20 minutes. No one answers. Right. Couple hours later, like, they finally get contact with the young person and like the kid's like, I'm not going to school. But here's the thing. There's a couple things embedded in that. First, for a lot of individuals that are volunteers, that's the first time they have felt that type of rejection. So part of it is everyone in Thread is on a journey. And that journey can be quite uncomfortable. So everyone has a coach. So there's a person called a head of family who's also a volunteer. And their role really is to coach the adults through their own stuff. It's to coach the adults on not just keeping showing up. Because what happens is, imagine you're that young person in their family. You don't open the door. You open it after a couple hours. And then that person keeps coming back. Just think about in your own life, like how many times have you told someone no? And then they just decided, yeah, I'll keep coming back anyway. Like, it's such unconditional love.
No,
it's like
powerful.
It's like a powerful thing. So, you know, in some instances, the relationship clicks very quickly. In other instances, it takes like 6 months of just showing up and being rejected before things start to click. And then the key thing is, like, once you get a conversation going, it's like, how are you showing up in that conversation? So is it, do you have your homework done? Why haven't you been, you know, are you projecting onto someone what you think success should look like, or actually inviting them to be in a relationship with you? Because those look very different. The inviting them to be in a relationship has nothing to do with you telling them what to do. It has to do with you sharing what's going on in your life. Did you just get in an argument with your, you know, significant other before you went to pick them up? Are you struggling in your job? Did you just have like an issue in one of your classes in school? Like, it's being vulnerable and being open. It's not just, it's like consistently showing up and then consistently showing up in a way that messages to the young person that I need you, like you have value and I need you. And that then starts to break open both people in that relationship in a way that's very, very productive.
Sarah, what's the What's the time commitment? And I know there's a specific structure. You started to allude to it. We have the volunteers. We have the head of family.
Wait, one second.
Yeah, but wait one second. I want to follow up with it because you have grandparents. So you've got this really sort of structure that resembles a family, right, where everyone's helping one another.
Our structure really resembles a couple things, like the structure of the head of family, and then grandparents are another type of volunteer that coach heads of family. It basically mimics a corporate structure. It also mimics a gang structure. So just calling out, like, all that stuff's the same.
So going back to Nestor's question, let's say Nestor goes home today and he says to his wife,
okay,
this is amazing. We have to do this.
And let's say you and Linda say that.
So
it's me and my wife and Don and Linda. We do this for Deshaun.
Right.
How does that work? Is that's not the way it
how
works.
Do people
we
volunteer
from a different place?
No, that is how it
that
actually.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like you didn't realize that's what's going to happen.
Because we've got people driving around in their car right now who may say, and I'm going to get back to when you drove past Dunbar the first time and had that epiphany. But there might be people in their car who are saying, I want to learn more. I may want to do this. Let's start with the simple. If people want to volunteer, how do they do that?
It's simple. So you can contact us at info@thread.org. And what we basically the commitment is to have one interaction. If you're in a Thread family, so there's lots of different roles in Thread. You could be a grandparent, a head of family. It's really about who do you want to coach and who do you want to be coached by? Because everyone in Thread has a coach, including board members, staff. It's pervasive throughout the entire community. But it's literally one interaction a week. So it could be one ride to school. It could be one after school homework session. It could be going to a Ravens game. It could be going to get a burger. It's one interaction per week for a year. That is the commitment. And then the way it all gets coordinated
is... So hold on, this child will have 40 relationships after 10 years. Now I'm doing the math on this, right? So four people for a year, and then a new team comes in, correct?
No. So the idea is that, one, what our model allows for is if you did have one of the four leave after a year, then, you know, one of the dangers of one-to-one relationships is if it breaks, you can cause a rejection for the young person, mm-hmm. right? So when you have four people, the likelihood all four are going to leave after a year is very low. So then if three remain, those three can help facilitate a fourth person coming in and building a relationship.
I don't feel abandoned.
Yeah, I don't feel abandoned.
Perfect.
And that new person has like a bridge to the relationship.
So is this a 10-year commitment for my wife and I and Don and Linda if we
no,
do this?
No, it's a one-year
commitment.
But then it's on Thread to provide such a spiritual, professional, and personal development experience for you that you don't want to leave after the year and you decide to say, oh, I'll do a second year.
Or I can say I want to take on Deshaun for the next year and his cousin.
Can you do more than one?
No.
See, don't make assumptions. Come on now. Go back to being the student. Let Sarah be the teacher.
No, I mean, these are good questions, but it's because we want the depth of relationships. So what we want is you to get to know Deshaun's cousin, but not because he's enrolled in Thread.
Understood.
But I absolutely want you to know Deshaun's cousin. And if you want to take Deshaun's cousin to school, that's just fine. But
right on.
He doesn't have to be enrolled in Thread. That's part of the ripple effect. Like that is the impact that it has is when those things naturally happen as an outpouring of your relationship with Deshaun. That's how we know we're succeeding. Like that is success. That you can even tell me that cousin's name and what that cousin needs and how you're going to interact. So, but no, it's a 1 year commitment. And then the other piece of the commitment, in addition to, I just don't want to miss this, one touch point per week is we have something monthly called Thread Talk. And Thread Talk is where the entire Thread community comes together. So you're with hundreds of people who are part of this movement with you, who are challenged with the same things internally within themselves and in some of the situational aspects of the work. And it's a, like we had our Thread Talk on Tuesday and there's music and it was DJed by one of our alumni and like, but then you sit down with your family and the head of family coordinates a meeting just like you would at a company and you coordinate like who's going to do this on, you know, this day of the month, who's going to do this, who's taking Deshaun to camp, who's taking him to school, like, you know, and so there's a coordination aspect that to that as well, because people's lives change. So what you want to do with Deshaun this month may not be the thing that you're doing with Deshaun next month, both based on what you want and need and what he wants and needs. So there's spaces within Thread in order to help ensure that that ongoing coordination occurs.
Now, I read somewhere, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you or someone at Thread is actually tracking every single interaction through an app called Tapestry. Is that still exist, or is that a real thing? Or
yes, that is a very real thing.
So tell us about Tapestry and why that's important then. So, other than it was an album by Carole King. So tell us about the app Tapestry.
Me too. Yeah. When we set out a pretty aggressive strategic plan, let me just take a step back to answer that kind of in a holistic way. When I came into Thread, I think I had a deep understanding that our young people, the value of our young people. And what I sold to them basically was, hey, you do all these things. You go to high school, you graduate, you get into college, you graduate. And you and Ryan, my husband, you guys are going to experience the same awesome life. And what occurred with our first cohort is they did all the things they were asked and more. And here we had this group of college graduates that then could not find jobs. And that's just one example of many data points that occurred over time that said to me and to us as a Thread community, like, hey, the systems are broken. The kids aren't broken, but let me tell you,
we're not done yet.
How broken the systems are. And it is not enough for them to graduate from high school and go to college and graduate, because the way the systems are designed are to continue to make it difficult every step of the way. So then almost from an ethical standpoint, like, the first cohort, like, are my family. Like, I'm raising my daughter with their children. Their children and my child are cousins. Like, right. And so it's personal. It's not some like organizational thing. It's like, my children are screwed. And I have some privilege that, can I help get them? Like, can we work collectively so that they're less screwed? Because this feels terrible to have my children experience this. So what that led to is like a shift in our strategic direction, which is we had been invited to go to over 30 cities. And instead of doing that, we said, well, is there some way to actually change the systems? And what we started to realize is that that drove where we were trying to go, which is our intention is to get to a place where we're enrolling 7.5% of every freshman class in the Baltimore City Public School system every year.
7.5%?
Yes.
7.5% of the bottom 25 or 7.5%?
7.5%.
Of the whole banana. Oh, wow. So how many children?
There's 80,000, right?
It's about 300 freshmen. So if you actually think about it, that's a manageable number.
How many high schools are there in the city then? A dozen?
More than that.
Well, the specialty schools. I'm thinking the ones that play football, right?
But there are 20,000 students roughly grade 9 to 12.
So that's 10,000, and that would be 300 of 10,000. It would be 300 of 10,000 would be 3%, right? So
no. So sadly, you can't just take 80,000 and divide by 13 because you actually have students
atrophy.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And so it amounts to about 300 young people a year. But if you look at where we are from an outcomes base, if you look at the, it's a little bit outdated data, but it's the best we have. Students who have GPAs of less than 1.0 during their freshman year, on average, only 6% finish in 4 years. But in Thread, it's 71%.
Wow.
And then if you extend out to 6 years, because sometimes it takes a little bit longer if you've failed some grades or, you know, there's some catching up to do, it's actually 85%. So if we could get to the scale of enrolling 7.5% of the lowest performing, highest potential young people, it does a couple of different things. Like, one, it would shift the high school graduation rate in the city materially by over 5%, But what it would also do is you create basically a group of 20,000 Baltimoreans. Right. So you've got, you know, 3,000 young people. That's not even including alumni. You add in the volunteers, over 7,000 volunteers. That's not including volunteer alumni, collaborators, donors, staff, board. You end up with about 20,000 people in Baltimore as part of the Thread community. So now you've got a diverse group that represents 5% of the whole city behaving in a way that is building these mutual tight-knit relationships. And so, like, that became, like, our North Star is how do we actually change the culture of a city through building these relationships that change how we're interacting with one another.
And how we see these kids. I mean, one of the things in your TED Talk that I'm addicted to, you mentioned we either see these kids, I think it's, I'll put words in your mouth, as lost causes, or we see them as the pipeline of leadership in our city. And I thought, I wrote that down. I thought, lost cause or the pipeline of leadership. To me, that just captured it.
Yeah, and like, I mean, look, you can come at this from a humanized perspective. You can also come at it from a very, like, capitalist perspective, which is, the companies in Baltimore need talent. Like, it's not that we lack jobs in the area. It's that there's a mismatch between our workforce and the jobs that we have. Well, that's very costly to the corporate community to have to recruit from outside of Baltimore, right? So this matters for everyone. Like, if we can come together in this way at a larger scale, what it does is it changes all of these different aspects of our city. It can impact our economy.
Yeah, at some point after Freddie Gray and before I began Baltimore Positive, you know, I had some thoughts about all of this, and I thought to myself, we need better people here. We have people. We need to water them and make them better human beings. I need to be a better human. I hope at 50 I'm better than I was at 30, right? We're all hoping to do. I don't know that everybody feels that way. It's taken a long time for me to, you know, get to this point where we're doing these kinds of conversations to pick people up. But I thought, how do we get better people? Well, you better grab them when I've been the last couple of days talking about pre-K, right? Like, literally how the mind works at 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, the most important, you know, part of human development. But you've got these vulnerable people that are either going to be contributing or not, and these are the people I'm walking through the harbor with and everyone's walking through society with here. Let's make them better people.
Well,
let's make us all better people. The coaches and the coaches become better people.
Correct. And from a neuroscience perspective, the second most plastic time in one's life in terms of the plasticity of the brain is adolescence.
Sure.
And so it's actually easier to move the needle with young people than it is with the adults. So like for a basic science perspective, that is true. It's also true from a cultural perspective. So like the real barrier to this, like, I assume everyone comes in with best intentions. I don't think there are good and bad people. I think that we have all been born into a set of systems. The culture in this country, in this city, is a white male European dominant culture. Now, we all exist in that culture. That culture has very crisp traits. Traits of that culture include things like a right to comfort. So, it includes things like a sense of urgency, a valuing of qualitative data over quantitative data. And so these traits show up in all of our interactions. And so part of it is, how do we build a culture that actually is representative? So building a place where it's not, we're including other people in a white dominant culture, essentially. How do we actually build a culture that's representative of the diversity? Because relationships don't scale, but what does scale is norms. Norms scale. Like, think about the military. Like, you know, when you've met someone who's been in the military, there's certain norms about being whatever you think of the norms, there are norms, right? Like, they look you in the eye, they shake your hand in a particular way. Often their haircut is
particular. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Exactly.
They have a language.
There's all sorts of structure.
They have a language.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Exactly. So the thing is, you can scale norms. So a lot of what Thread has done is we've outlined a set of norms that we think are critically important to having the relationships kind of do what you're saying, which is getting people to a place of self-reflection. Like, it's in the relationships that you get to that place. And so, like, an example would be a norm in Thread is call a thing a thing. So that goes in direct opposition to a right to comfort, because sometimes when you call a thing,
it's not politically correct.
People get really uncomfortable, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me.
The truth is like the most uncomfortable thing for most people in any circumstance, right? That's the call the thing.
It depends on,
your
culture,
truth.
Right?
That's your truth. This is my truth. That's what that thing is, right?
Yeah. So in a dominant culture, in a European dominant culture, that's the most uncomfortable thing, but that's not true in other cultures.
Sure.
And so that's the thing. It's like how do we create a culture and a set of norms within our city that is representative of the diversity that is Baltimore? And that's what we're doing. So like, you know, and if we also think about, like, I think right to comfort is a good example. Like, who's comfortable most of the time? Like, you think about equity in a relationship. So even thinking about, like, you know, I've just told you all this thing about mutuality, and then I'm telling you that you've got an adult going for 6 months to a young person's home banging on the door. You have to resolve those things. How do you resolve those two things? It's that equity in a relationship means that if one person has been so structurally disadvantaged, then part of building equity in the relationship is that adult needs to show up for the 6 months to build the trust. Now, it doesn't stay that way forever, right?
That's equity and equal. We went through that with Hornbeck.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, but you got to have equity, not equity. Like, if you want equity at a systems level, people have to learn how to behave in an equitable way in an interpersonal relationship. Like, what is the give and take? Like, say you're in a group and you're having a conversation about racial equity. What does it look like? Who do you think is drained most by that conversation?
The adult.
Let's talk about it racially. Like, you have a racially diverse group, age diverse group. Who do you think is most drained by that conversation?
Depends who you ask, I would say. I wouldn't say there's a normal.
Who do you think?
So I would say, you know, depends on how many times they've had that conversation. But like, take, you know, if you are a parent of a black child and they're going to get their driver's license, right? Everyone gets scared when their kid gets their driver's license because it's a scary thing to have your kid driving around, right? But there are a whole set of precautions that if you are the parent of a black child that you have to put in place physically in your car to protect your child that you're not even going to think of if you were unlikely to think of if you were the parent of a white child. So things like can you get your license and registration? How is it positioned? Do you have to buy a special device to put it on your visor? Like, these are all things that, like, that discomfort is daily. It goes back to the example of the water in the schools. My kids are uncomfortable all the time. All the time. They're always in discomfort.
Sarah, I had someone say to me one time, it's interesting when you bring that up. I had an African-American friend say to me one time, we were having a discussion about race. And they said, let me put it to you this way. In this next 24-hour period, how many times are you going to actually stop and think about being white? And I looked and I thought, I don't know that I'm going to think about being white.
I don't know that I've given much of a thought.
And they said, and they looked at me and said, we will think about it nonstop, being African-American and what it means in that 24 hours. We think about what it means to be black all of the time. And they weren't being critical. They were just saying, you understand the difference. There's not a day. You mentioned going out. I use all the time because I used to, when you talked about public safety issues, and certainly you deal with them with your young men and women. I said one of the tragic things that's happened over the past 10 years is both of the things I'm about to say are true, and that is there's not a parent of an African-American child that sends them out in the current climate that we exist in at night to go to the mall or wherever else that's not more afraid than they were 10 or 15 years ago because of the climate. The flip side is there's also not a loved one, a spouse, of a police officer who's not more afraid that when they go on the street. Those two concepts, both very real, are not a great mixture of things that might happen. And they lead to bad things happening because both are true. And it's unsettling.
Yeah, what you're describing in the conversation with your friend is that the ability to not have to think about it, that is privilege.
Perfect example.
And so if, you know, if you've ever had something happen in your life where you were thinking about it constantly, someone in your family was sick or something went really wrong with your work, like I think about those times in my life and how draining it was, just emotionally, physically draining when you have something that you're constantly. And so that is, you know, I think there's ways that, from an equity perspective, it's, you know, how do we find the equity in the relationship to try and make that less draining? And that can be as simple as how we engage in a conversation and taking on more of the discomfort. So like in that conversation, like if you were uncomfortable, kudos to you, like get right. uncomfortable, like right. get uncomfortable, get comfortable being uncomfortable. Right. And that, but that is like you were saying, that isn't our culture. Our culture is,
we all seek comfort. We all want certainty. Right. We all want, you know, but pleasure and not pain. We all literally, so that we're fighting that all day long, whether I eat the ice cream or whether I don't. Right. I mean, there's a price to be paid for that. Right.
Well, it's a yeah. great spot to take a break. If you don't think, for, and our listeners, I know our listeners believe, but if there are folks out there who still don't believe that there's hope and there's bright light in this city, they haven't met Sarah Heminger. They're not familiar with Thread. Smart people doing great things. We got one more segment. I can't wait.
We're at Jennings Cafe. It is Baltimore Positive. When I come back, I'm going to figure this out. We're going to go back to the beginning. I swear I'm going to hear the inspiration of this. Sarah Heminger from Thread. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.